Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, November 23rd. And I'll be honest, I got nothing.
Dude, if you are listening to this, start it over and listen to the way Austin starts this podcast. Sounded like someone shared some very, very unfortunate news with him.
I mean, yeah, what do you say? This is an unspinnable zone. Like, I want so badly to spin everything. Oh, and be the propaganda machine that Odell Beckham Jr. is on Twitter here. But I just, after watching that in person last weekend, which, yes, I did, I just don't know what to say.
All right. Before we get into, your experience in Columbus, which I'm very interested in, and I do have a spin zone.
Okay. Please. Indulge me.
Okay. I'm not saying that in 1 year you can get to that. I am saying we saw a jump from last year to this year. That was a jump we didn't think could be made. Nobody did. Thought it could be made this far. And I'm also going to tell you that this year's roster versus next year's roster, it's going to be about the same amount of turnover as you saw from 2020 to 2021. There are going to be a lot of new faces, a lot of new names. Is that good, bad? I don't know. But I can tell you it's going to be a lot. It's going to be different. And no one can tell you, and I'm not saying it can be as big of a jump. But I'm telling you I saw one jump. So I expect, I would also just, the roster is going to look different, guys.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably save our talk about this game for after our first commercial break, which maybe will happen. I don't know. People are telling me that the commercials just don't work. So we'll see. If nothing else, you guys get a good laugh. but yeah, I like that your spin zone isn't even a spin zone about this game. It's about future games because this game is so unspinnable. I'll save my takeaways. But yeah, long weekend for any unfortunate Detroit/Michigan State football fans out there. But hey, guess what? Last week, great week for our favorite son, who really like aced the test. You know what I mean? This past week in school, they aced the test, whereas the other son who was doing so well, right, maybe took a step back and just forgot that there was a paper due and just totally didn't turn it in. Our basketball boys had a nice little week, a little 2-win week.
You know what it was? Is they turned in their report card, and we took them in the other room and just looked them in the eye and said, "I appreciate you. we appreciate you. Thank you." And they never get that, right? But we gave it to them this time because we did. We really did appreciate them.
Thanks for making this thing easier, boys. Yeah, that was nice.
Nice win at Hinkle. Another kind of no doubter to the point where, you know, Michigan State fans are very hypercritical. And I think can be in a positive way. Everyone seemingly is understanding of the game, which is fun. Not everyone, but a lot of people, and they can see, you know, what has to improve with each player. And we watch them grow and then it's all fun. Right. With Butler, when we were watching that game, it was like, there's all that still needs to happen with Michigan State's team. Like, everyone on the roster has an area they probably need to improve. You couldn't even look at that because Butler was so bad that it was noticeable watching them be bad versus like what MSU had to improve on, you know. It was distracting. And I think it would be shocking because we'd all just kind of assume Butler is not going to put that type of product on the floor. Now, yeah, they have injuries. Yeah, they had a starter not play and was kicked off the team for good reason. But still, like, that was
Yeah, you don't expect that from Butler. I'll say this, whether this win against Butler ends up being a good win at the end of the season or not is irrelevant to this exact game, but I'm interested to see what they become later in the season. But early on in the season, going and beating Butler on the road by 21 is a nice win, no matter how the rest of their season goes. I mean, it's impressive. It was an impressive game.
Well, Butler just lost tonight to number 19 team in the country on a neutral floor by 18. Yep. So you could argue this was a more impressive performance than Houston's because this was on the road. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, there was lots to like. And I think the first thing we liked, Austin, was Max Christie.
Man, he is smooth. It's really nice when you get freshmen that are ready to roll from the jump. And Max Christie looks every bit of a Big Ten starting guard. And I know there was, you know, he was a five-star. He had a lot of great offers, but there was a legitimate concern as to how big the learning curve would be for him because he did not play in this huge division or come from like this super elite, you know, high school circuit. So there was a little bit of concern. I think we can pretty much do away with that. I mean, he hit two threes in this game, just made some, I think beyond that, we always sort of knew he'd be able to shoot it. Yeah. I was impressed with his, obviously he's become really plus defensive wing already, but he made a couple of really nice driving plays. I think he only finished with one assist, but he got to the rim, made some plays for others that just, really, to me, while only fouling once, that was, to me, what was impressive. It looks like he has a really mature game for a guy who's played all of three or four now games. So I was very happy with what we saw from him. Another guy, you got to give him credit. He's been the victim of some criticism on this podcast previously. No. Marcus Bingham did what he should do against teams like Butler that do not have size. 10 points, only 6 rebounds, but hey, 6 rebounds and 2 steals and 6 blocks. I've been one of his biggest critics because I just it's to use the kid example. It's the kid who gets a B+ and you're like, "But you didn't study. Imagine what you would have done if you would have studied." You know what I mean? And it's like, "You're it's all in there, Marcus. You just got to bring it out." And you got to give him credit because the what he does really, really well, he does at a as good as just about anybody level. And that's blocking shots and making things hard for undersized opponents. And he did that once again in this game.
Oh, and, you know, there was the offensive, not an incredible performance, but he just put himself in the right places at the right times. And that's all you really want. I think you could ask him maybe a little more aggressive, but he's just put himself in the right places in the game. He's not searching for the game and the game's kind of coming to him for maybe the first time I've ever seen it. And that's exciting. Speaking of Marcus, he, the 6 block shots was pretty incredible. And it looked like high school, like where he was like people had never seen someone that big or something, but you know, he had full control of the paint and, you know, we saw him already, go against different sized big guys. You know, Kansas, obviously different animal, but I think he can do this against everybody. Like I think he can defend the paint. I think we've seen now he can defend the paint against a pretty tough Big Ten front court. You know, we've seen with Kofi, Zach Edey, Travion Williams, Hunter Dickinson, Trace Jackson Davis. I feel confident Marcus is up to that task.
Certainly from a block shot perspective, I would agree. I mean, I it's hard to say otherwise. He's averaging 3.5 blocks a game through 4 games, and this is the thing he did really, really well last year. But to your point, if you look at his career averages, first of all, he's playing 10 more minutes a game than he's ever played before. I think that alone speaks to a level of trust from Izzo. And again, it's so early in the season, but I think that speaks to a level of trust from Izzo on his behalf, because it's not like the competition's any less, you know, difficult this year. If anything, another year of experience for Marble and Sissoko, you would have thought maybe his minutes stayed the same, or probably not went down, but stayed pretty close to the same. Instead, he's really owning the position. He's averaging 8 rebounds a game, a little north of 8 rebounds a game. What do you think his previous, without looking, if you haven't looked already, what do you think his previous career high for rebounds per game is?
3.6,
very close. So his production has been tremendous. He's averaging almost 13 points a game. His previous career high is 3.5. So, you know, we talked about with this team, like who are going to be the guys to take that step forward from the veterans. I think thus far, 4 games in, you're really seeing something from Marcus Bingham. I think there's still moments in there where you're kind of like, you are a bonehead. Like, what are you doing? But the ups thus far are outweighing the downs. And I think when you look around the Big Ten, and we'll talk about this, like, I don't know that it's, I mean, again, it's super, super, super early. But everybody was kind of saying there are like 5 teams that are surefire better than Michigan State. Yeah. And while I think there are definitely a couple,
yep,
I'm not sure it's 5. I think it's closer to 2, because I think Purdue is a legitimately extremely good team, and I think once Coburn comes back, Illinois is going to be in the conversation as well. But the other ones, we've seen some mixed things so far. So
yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure if we can judge Illinois quite yet.
No, I'm giving them a big time benefit of the doubt once Coburn comes back.
Exactly. But yeah, to your point, you know, you kind of look around and you're like, okay, where do we really stack up? You know, maybe not as far off as people thought. I want to quick jump on Marcus Bingham's block shots, because I thought it's something, it's such a clip now that he's rocketed up to 10th all time in Michigan State history.
He just Jeez.
Just passed Kenneth Goins. So Marcus now 10th, only one block behind Del Von Roe and Jaren Jackson. And
but that's so comical to hear that he's still behind Jaren. It's hysterical to me that if you compare the amount of games these two played in, it's comical.
What we're not going to do is come down on Marcus when we're supposed to be building.
No, but it's not coming down on him as much as it is just reiterating how absurd Jaren Jackson was in his 1 year.
So, and Bingham is about, will, if, you know, health stays all the same, Marcus Bingham is easily going to break MSU's all-time block record. Like, that's going to be coming by mid-conference season. So, you know, up to 90th all time in Big Ten history, you know, he's going to be up there, you know, and you look at the names in the top 50 and you're like, oh, I remember that guy.
Right.
Yeah. He's going to be one of those guys when people one day are like, hey, you remember Marcus Bingham? That'll be in 2038 at some like bachelor party in Minnesota. And people will be like, yeah, he's all right. Anyway, so moving on, there was another game, Austin.
Indeed.
A game that allegedly happened after a football game.
You can tell me that happened. I wouldn't know. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time here, to be quite honest with you. MSU beat Eastern Michigan 83-59, rare matchup of green teams. Looking at the box score here. Yeah, pretty much what you like to see. Bingham, another dominant performance, 19-12 with 4 blocks. Christie getting a few more shots up, ended up with 13 points. I think, you know, if I have to get encouraged by anything, that or what excites me is, again, I keep seeing A.J. Hogard's stat lines and I keep loving them. They're not going to blow you out of the water, but he's getting 4 or 5 assists a game. Like he is routinely putting up. He's averaging 5 assists a game. And that, to me, this year he's not going to be an incredible scorer. But if you are able to be a backup and average around 20 minutes a game and end up with 5 assists, you are doing an incredible job. That outweighs the point guard play. Like, if that's your backup point guard,
love it.
Think of that is such a monumental step forward. I almost think you look at like the share between him and Tyson Walker as like, this is your starting point guard level. Because I don't necessarily think one is like outperforming the
it doesn't even
other matter at this point. It doesn't.
It doesn't matter. It's like both can play 20. I don't care. you know.
Yeah, but we have a competent point guard on the floor at all times, which is like
They both bring to the table something very different, which is pretty kind of, you know, Hogard's in, you feel weirdly confident you could get a bucket at any time. He's the guy that it's fun. So Austin, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you want running the point in winning time? Do you want Walker to be setting someone else or AJ Hogard being someone on the floor that says, I'm going to get to the bucket?
I don't know. It's a very interesting, I see the appeal of both. I think I will say today I'd probably want Hogard if it was like a next game situation, only because, again, I think he can. I just think that Tyson Walker is still settling into to being on the team. I think right now Hogard's benefiting from having a year of experience and playing under Tom Izzo under his belt. I think as the season goes on, I have greater faith that Walker's jumper is going to come around and his ability to kind of get his own shot that isn't going to the rack will probably come around a little bit more. So I think long term, I'm going to say it'll probably be Walker. But I think today, you know, as we go into this battle for Atlantis, Hogard's, I'm feeling pretty darn good about AJ Hogard. The stock is going to the moon, man. I can't tell you how happy I am. I bought low.
Oh man. You really were maybe the only one in, as far as I was aware. Right. So, you know, it's easy to blast past a win against Eastern Michigan, but I'm going to add two things. One, last year, Michigan State wasn't beating the brakes off the teams, even bad ones. If you can remember the close game against Detroit or Oakland was another close game, like too close for too long. They're beating the hell out of some teams who may end up being bad. I don't know. I mean, Eastern Michigan's not going to be good, but they did go to Indiana and lose by 6. So
a win's a win. I mean, at this point in the season, it's more about how you perform. And yeah, maybe you're right. You know, I don't know if these teams end up being good, they end up being bad. To me, it's more about how does MSU look, and I'm personally thrilled with how they've looked since Kansas. And honestly, I'll even say going back to Kansas, it really was not that bad. Like they, especially all things considered with all the new faces and everything they've, you know, all the really bad vibes they had coming off of kind of throughout this entire offseason. Like it's, I think that sitting here today at 3-1 with your only loss coming to a legitimate national championship contender, you know, you got to feel okay.
I think they've overperformed so far. And, you know, now comes the part where, you know, you've had some tune-up games, I would guess you call them, because this battle for Atlantis, as you mentioned, is stacked with some teams here. Mm-hmm. And the first one's a great matchup against Loyola, Chicago fighting Drew Valentine's, who come into this one undefeated, 4-0. This is a team that, you know, Porter Moser was destined maybe to go to a bigger step, but maybe a team he wasn't quite ready to walk away from because they have a lot of upperclassmen talent here. Mm-hmm. And they got some dogs too. I remember watching them a lot last year, and they returned Lucas Williamson, who is every Michigan State fan would love. He's the returning defensive player of the year for their conference, 6'4". He's just all defense first and everything.
Power wing is how I think of him.
You'll know it when you see it. Braden Norris, point guard, he's been starting since he was a freshman. So he has all this experience in the world. So he's very consistent for them. Not a lot of height, 6 feet, but you know, something that he can't probably take advantage of Tyson Walker, but on the flip side, AJ Hogard, you got to think it's got to be attacking the basket. And then I'm going to get this last name wrong, but Aher Uguak, who is...
That's pretty good.
Thanks. I could be completely wrong. He's... Malik Hall is going to have his hands full. This is a kid that finally popped. I think, if I remember correctly, he's all of a sudden kind of on a scoring streak of sorts. He's averaging, he had 16 against Calvin State, 18 against Florida Gulf Coast, and then 14 and 6. So he's kind of fallen off, which is, if I remember from the years past, he was just not quite all the way there. Now he's kind of taken that final step forward as far as the offense goes. So they're a really well coached team. He's brought a new, maybe more 3-point attempt focused, a little more professional offensive strategy. And I don't know. I think this is a team that, as we all know, is also not going to be afraid of the Michigan State on your team's jersey. You know, they've seen some teams and they've beaten some teams. So
yeah, I mean, several of these guys were on that. Yep. We're on that team that made it all the way to the Final Four not that long ago. I think this is a game, again, where Marcus Bingham can have a huge impact, because to your point, there is not a ton of height on this in this playing group, really. You know, Ryan Schweiger is their leading scorer right now. He's at 6'7". They only have one guy that's above 6'8". And it looks like it's Jacob Hudson, who plays about 11 minutes a game and only averages one rebound. So, you know, to me, this is really big. In my opinion, this might be the biggest test, like, so far. I would even maybe say above Butler, because while Butler was on the road, this is neutral site, which is difficult. And it's against a team with all that experience and just like a playing group that has played together a lot. And despite the fact that Porter Moser is no longer there, Drew Valentine was on this staff. And like, I'm sure they didn't change much of anything. So there's just a lot of consistency with this group. And I think this is as big a test outside of Kansas that Michigan State has faced so far. I do think this is a game they should win, though. To be perfectly clear, they should be the more talented team. I think the front court ability to probably win on the glass a lot, hopefully demonstrably, should be a big deal. Again, Tate Hall is leading their team in rebounding, and he checks in at 6'6", and he averages seven boards a game. So I'd like to think MSU can come out and just having the Izzo against Drew Valentine effect and just kind of having the superior front court is a big deal. However, for better or worse, Joey Hauser, I think, is a little bit questionable for this. They said they expect to have him back. Hopefully he does play. But if he plays, I hope he plays well, because he is off to a very poor start to the season thus far. He's only averaging 7 points a game, shooting 25% from three. He is averaging 8 rebounds, though, and his size on the glass is a legitimate difference-making aspect for MSU in this one. He is tied for the team lead in rebounds per game. He's averaging the same amount as Marcus Bingham.
Yeah, I mean, he's found other ways to contribute, but, you know, at this point, it just feels like the microscope is on him so much that everyone is already ready to say whatever they want to say after he does anything. That's back to the expectations thing, right? There is just a lot of expectations, I think.
He came in with a lot of expectations, and I think the only actual thing that anybody thought he would really bring was the stretch four aspect, and he's just not delivering on that. And when you can't do that, you need to have something to fall back on, and he just doesn't have that offensively. Like, he's a perfectly fine player, but I think everybody's expectations were that he would be a staple, possibly a guy who's only around for a year, like that type of player, and we're obviously not seeing that. That being said, this would be, if he's healthy enough, this could be a great get right opportunity for him, because he should have a size advantage and be able to, get some open looks with how well the point guards are playing.
Right. But the best part about this game, Austin, is there's a game right after. And before I get into it, have you been watching any college hoops at all this outside of Michigan State?
A little bit. This is feast week, so this is really my big first week. So I just watched Ohio State just beat Seton Hall, as a matter of fact.
Well, the reason I bring it up is, like, you're going to get a heavy, heavy portion of Michigan State hoops back to back to back, which is, it's a lot, but you know, I feel like I just did that with Marquette by accident. Like I just happened to turn it on and they were playing three nights in a row. And I was like, I feel like I could diagram Shaka Smart's offense at this point. Like, why am I watching so much more? And it was fun, but you know, it also may be, hope we don't overeat in three straight games. If you know, you hope there's some more positive outcomes than negative, because three straight bad ones, that's going to be tough. And the reason I even bring that up is because this field is so stacked. You know,
yes, it is.
You know, I'm not at all implying that MSU is going to lose all three games. I'm just saying that got a strong group here. And, you know, we're obviously going to play Loyola. The winner of that game would play the winner of Auburn versus UConn. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have Baylor, Arizona State, Syracuse, and VCU. So a lot of really talented teams. UConn and Auburn in particular are probably going to be top 25 teams all year. So, you know, don't know who you're going to get, but Dan Hurley, coach at UConn, Bruce Pearl, coach at Auburn. I only bring those names up because Bruce Pearl seems like a guy everyone can just hate. So do you feel that way, or is that just me?
He just feels like the guy who loves cheating the most.
Yeah, and like is unabashedly about it.
Yeah. But is also not like super, he's unabashed about it, but he also won't just like own it. Whereas I feel like other guys just sort of own it and don't care. Whereas he, like LSU, like if you just look at LSU, like Will Wade.
Yeah.
Like Will Wade just doesn't, he's still their head coach. Do you realize that? It's been like 2 years since they were like, oh man, this guy's clearly paid people to come play for him, and nothing's happened. Which I think the real takeaway is, I heard somebody else say this, but like takeaway is just never cooperate.
Why would you? What's the point?
What's the point? No one's gonna do. They're clearly not gonna do anything. Nobody actually cares. But yeah, Bruce Pearl I think has always been like a little too. Although he does take his shirt off and go in the student section from time to time, which I can appreciate.
Dude.
And he kind of has. He has a little bit of the. The Alex Jones thing where he just keeps getting redder. So I don't know. I sort of appreciate that about him, but yeah, I mean, listen, Auburn and UConn a couple years ago, you would have thought, wow, two kind of dead programs in all Austin, honesty.
Austin, but, I just want to keep going on this because, because Bruce Pearl is like a guy, and Will Wade for that matter. Like, they're like, hey, we are doing all these really bad illegal things. And then the athletic department is like, hey, are you comfortable lying about doing those things? They're like, buddy, are you asking me to do something way easier and way less that's bad? Yeah, I think I can handle it.
Yeah, no, I think it goes the other way around. I think they go to the AD. They're like, listen, we're doing a lot of illegal shit. Yeah. We're definitely not going to own up to it.
No,
you're cool with that, right? And they're like, Bronson. Hell yeah. You're like, listen, we hired you. We knew what we were getting into. So yeah, I think there's for sure just like a very just an understanding of, especially in the South, man. The SEC, you kidding me?
Yeah.
I think Auburn of all places in the world, where Charles Barkley literally said the reason we got Cam Newton is because he paid him more than anybody else. You think they're not comfortable with dropping bags? Please get out of here.
Well, and it's like they're breaking new ground in the SEC for basketball when they do it.
Yeah.
Because they just started outside of Kentucky and Florida, that conference, no one cares, right? But all of a sudden, these guys came in. They're like, whoa, 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 we can cheat over here, too. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like those. It's like they're looking. Well, I feel like there was like this probably like a little bit of actual honesty and integrity in SEC basketball because people cared so little, and
that's right.
And Kentucky was just always so good that I truly don't think Kentucky ever cheated. I just don't think they needed to. Maybe at the beginning of the – I think maybe I should say it this way. The beginning of the Calipari era. Well, okay, yeah. You know what? You're right. They've definitely cheated, and they've cheated a lot. But I guess they were the only ones that cared enough to cheat. But now the other ones are all like, now wait a minute. We can drop bags over here too. And – Yeah, and now they're, you know, kind of making a splash. And Auburn, I mean, listen, Auburn's churned out a couple of first rounders over the last few years. They were in the final. What was it? Not that long ago. No, I mean,
before, remember Virginia and the
oh,
they got dropped. They got
that's right. They got screwed.
I watched that live, and I was in such a, I was so under the influence that I probably didn't appreciate like what was happening. And this is how bad I was. That game happened right before the Michigan State Texas Tech game. Yep. And like, I watched that and I was like, wait, it's just over. Like you lose because there's no like drama. There's no commentators, you know, there's it just like happens. And I was like, yeah, but that was the wrong call. And then the game ended and people are walking by me like Auburn fans. And I was like, hey, that shouldn't have happened. And they're like, honestly, dude, die. Like, don't talk to me right now. You think I don't know that, buddy?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh. I know, John.
Exactly. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go watch my team, who I'm sure will have no problem playing.
See, I would be in the same brain space. Like, there's nothing you can say to me because of how mentally unwell I am before a big Michigan State basketball right. game. Like anything could happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody could like the roof could blow off the building and be like, well, that's weird.
That's like, and what happened? Okay,
when do we play?
That's like what happened. I was like, huh, that seems like a big deal, but I can't really focus on that right now.
Not a lot I can do about it. So what's next?
So that's your UConn and or Auburn preview.
It's just dynamite stuff.
This is what the
here's one thing I'd like to point out. I'd like to point out the fact that UConn has a player on their team named Rashul Diggins, and that is that's all I had. That's it. Actually my analysis.
And Akak.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what else we've got? We've got a here. This is how we're going to do analysis of future games in tournaments. Auburn has a young man named Zepp Jasper, just incredible.
And
Babatunde Akinbola.
Oh, see, I'm shocked you didn't let me just destroy.
I'm sorry. I should have. I really should have. That's my fault. Sorry to the listeners.
Oh, man. Okay. I will tell you that if we do play Auburn, they go, I think, 10 deep.
Right.
They're just going to throw waves of guys at you. And that's the Bruce Pearl thing, though, you know?
Yes, always has been. I think listen, if you're just looking at how to feel about this tournament, first of all, it is truly a stacked field. I mean, you read off all those names. Those are good-ass programs. And not just, like, from a program name perspective. In the reigning national champions, while it's a very different-looking team, they're in there. Syracuse, who gives everybody fits, is in there. These two teams we talked about, both of whom will be ranked, are in there. And Michigan State. I mean, listen, we're no slouches ourselves. This is one where I think, I mean, you want to win them all, but I think MSU needs to beat Loyola. And then, you know, you'd like to think that you can have a good showing, if not win, against one of those two, top 25-ish programs. And then you kind of see what happens from there. But this is a great, I almost look at this as the best measuring stick so far for MSU. It's like when they played in that Vegas tournament, they played, what was it, North Carolina and Texas and somebody else. And I UConn. Think they ended up, UConn, yeah. Did they end up winning that tournament? Or did we lost one of those games?
Didn't we? And I was there live.
That's right. See,
hey, shout out Sarah G. Saw her there out in Portland.
That's right.
It was fun. Saw a lot of Spartan friends out there.
Hell yeah.
So we'll see you guys all again at PK85, I hope.
Hell yeah.
And which is next year, right? And then it's wild. And man, getting ahead of ourselves, but
very
Washington, you know, the other Pacific Northwest thing.
Oh, I'll be at that one. That's a football. Yeah, we're about to get back to football. So, okay, that's a good natural segue back to football. Totally. All right, we're going to take a commercial break, collect ourselves for a bit. Oh, God damn it. All right. 3, 2, 1. Now we're back.
Wait.
John.
I was having fun. Not why we have to not have fun now.
I think we just have to laugh.
Okay. We're gonna quickly talk about the game, but more fun than that. We'll talk about you went to the game and our experiences thus far. Have you ever seen someone made a highlight video of the it was like the 2014 or 2000 and maybe 16 Big Ten championship, and it was the one where Ohio State beat Wisconsin 59-0. An Ohio State fan made a Wisconsin highlight reel of the game, and it was like the literally just the video for the Wisconsin team before the game, you know, where they introduce themselves and it's all hype, and then to the coin flip, and then it just goes black. I laugh because that happened where, like, we were the Chris Farley meme of like watching worse and worse. So bad.
Okay, I have a couple of things to say. First of all, I don't know how anybody ever wins in that stadium. I think there should be a rule for an Ohio State head coach that if you lose a game, it doesn't matter who it is to, it doesn't matter by how much, you are fired.
Fired.
You're fired. Fired, and you cannot coach a football team for at least like 4 years. It is a staggeringly intimidating stadium. And this is the first time I'd ever obviously been to a game there. It goes straight up. So it's like playing in a coliseum. You are on top of the field, and everyone is screaming as loud as they can the entire time. It is truly, truly an insanely intense atmosphere. The fact that MSU has ever won there, it just adds to D'Antonio's legacy. So first there's that.
Second,
during the tailgating, you just sort of felt like everyone, they were all so sure of what was about to happen. And I was like, I feel like you shouldn't be so sure. Like, maybe don't be like this offensively sure.
Yeah.
And then,
people
weren't even mean to me. Like, I was expecting some hostility, like just any, just even like a dash, like a sprinkling of hostility. None. Absolutely none. People were like, oh, Sparty's here. Like, kind of jeering me as I walked into my section.
Like, well, because you drove here. Like, what a moron you are.
They're like, why did you spend like this? Look at this idiot. Like, they all thought I was so stupid.
Like, that was really cool of you to come down here and, you know.
Thanks for giving your money to our university to watch you. I felt like one of those FCS teams that pays to get their asses handed to them.
Like,
that's truly what the experience felt like. But
you're just a tourist.
The game was over so fast. Like, the first drive, they at least had to work for it a little bit. And then I vividly remember the moment on that. Because I kept saying to myself, you know, I'm talking myself into this. I'm like, okay. Sure. They didn't hit any huge plays. They had to work their way down the field. If we can keep them doing that, maybe get a turn. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing, everything we talked about. And then as soon as that first ball to Garrett Wilson went over the top on their second drive, I remember watching it halfway up in the air and being like, the game's over. And I watched the game end on one pass. I'm like, if that's going to happen, we are so screwed. Because if they're going to do that here now, they're going to do that the entire game. And then when I really knew it was over was when Jaden Reed absolutely fumbled that ball, by the way. And then they missed the field goal. And I was like, this is good night. This one's long gone. So I'll admit a couple things. I absolutely left at halftime. I was not staying for that entire game. I was not going to stay for that entire game. I had other things to do, like drink.
Which time out? You were able to, imbibe in their stadium. Is that not true?
Yeah, you can buy beer there, which I did. But then just not stand there.
But Austin, back to the imitated environment.
Yeah.
That being blacked out drunk and timesing it by 100,000.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I get it.
I can tell you it is a suboptimal experience to just watch you to not even get to cheer at all and to just get your ass so thoroughly handed to you. It is a humbling experience as a fan. I'm going to go ahead and recommend that fans don't travel to those games for a few years. Like, let's take a little bit. Like, if you're going to go, really time it, like, where you think there might actually be a chance. Like, this year, if I didn't have a younger brother that lived there, probably wouldn't have gone. But my brother does live in Columbus. So I was like, oh, great. I get to go see him, and I'll make this worth, a little twofer. And instead, just was a – here's the thing. He ended up going to the Browns-Lions game the next day. So – he really had the worst weekend of any person alive. And it was.
Why?
I don't know. He's like, do you want, like, he's trying to sell me on that a couple weeks ahead. He's like, do you want to go? I'm like, absolutely not. Like, that you can convince me to waste my money here. You will never convince me to waste my money on watching the Lions play, the winless Lions play the Browns. There's no chance. None. So that was my experience.
Well, also, it's like I watched more pros play, NFL pros play for the Ohio State Buckeyes than are on the Lions. Like, I don't need to go see that.
It's a better
offense. Wide receiver corps? I swear to God. It's close. It's close.
It's not close, John. That's the thing. It's not close. None of the receivers. No, I am dead serious. I am 1,000% serious when I tell you Ohio State unquestionably has a better wide receiver corps than the Detroit Lions. No, there's no question. The best receiver on the Detroit Lions in college was what, Josh Reynolds?
I don't want to talk about it. We don't have
Khalif. Who's Khalif? I don't know where Khalif Raymond. Did Khalif Raymond play collegiate football? I have no idea.
What we can't do right now is turn a Michigan State beatdown into a Lions sad podcast.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We can't do that to our listeners. I'm sorry. Anyways.
I will tell you this. You can call it making excuses. It's not. Ohio State beat the living hell out of Michigan State. That happened. Whatever. It's over. One loss is one loss. I will say that I am not 100% certain that the talent – and Ohio State could have scored more. I think we all agree.
Right? I mean, it was 49-0 at halftime.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, I don't know how much farther off. It just doesn't feel like talent for talent. Michigan State was 50 points worse than that team in 30 minutes of play. And here's why I say that. There are injuries in college football. That's part of it. But because it's part of it, you saw what I said at the beginning of the podcast. MSU just does not have the depth against the elite. They have the depth against Rutgers. They have the depth against, Northwestern. But against the elite, you saw the drop-off. So, like, starter to starter, MSU has a handful of starters that could compete at Ohio State for starting positions. Fortunately, the left tackle, Jalen Naylor, who would be in that wide receiver room because of his speed alone, Kenneth Walker, who is clearly not 100%, Jacob Panishuk, who I don't believe I saw him play. It's not making excuses. I'm just saying the people that could compete at Ohio State for playing time didn't play for Michigan State. And when you take the next step down, that gap is sizable compared to the Ohio State gap from the 1-2 spot.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, MSU's margin for error with the current talent base in that game was minimal if every single player played. And not only did that not happen, but it wasn't arguably Crouch also barely played. Which we talked about was massive.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. It's like if all of these starters played, Michigan State would have lost by a lot. But my point, when you take away those guys, I don't think it's a 50-point deficit at halftime. And Chuck Brantley, you know, is he the difference between being down 50 or 42? It doesn't matter. The greater point is there's a long way to go, but I'm not sure it's quite as vast as it looked, because there are guys that MSU has. They have dudes that just couldn't suit up for this one.
Yeah, and it's okay. I think that's the other part of this is, like, do you want to lose by 49? No.
No.
But at the end of the day, this was the one we always had circled in pen as this was going to be a bloodbath. Now, expectations change. I think, you know, you're making a very good point that I don't think on a normal night that it gets that bad. However, I think it just talks about, like, the state of the kind of like the program. Like, at the end of the day, there are three, maybe four programs that are in Ohio State's caliber. And you see this, like, Mel Tucker even came out and said it. He's like, we just don't have enough individual dudes to go hang with them. We just don't. And he's like, I think the top of it does, the rest of the roster doesn't. And that's where you see the difference. I mean, Ohio State's able to reel in top five classes every single year. That piles up. That depth piles up. Again, why do you think this receiver room is so ridiculous? Because they're able to land one of these superstars in every single class. I'm sure there's more guys just waiting to come join that group. And yeah, it's just, you know, it is what it is. I think the interesting part now will be to see what like you made a good point, the turnover in the offseason. I mean, do you think it's probably going to be pretty drastic? Because Mel's not afraid to say, like,
we did it once.
And he'll do it again. I mean, this guy's got a vision. He's got something he can sell. He knows what he needs to do. And I also have to think that this will be, and we'll talk all about this in the offseason, but, like, this is going to be a very attractive situation for
He did it.
Well, he did it. And you have to think that it'd be an attractive place for another transfer running back, of which there are many out there, or a wide receiver, like, or a defensive end who knows they can come in and get playing time right away. Like, there's a lot to like about what Michigan State's going to have to offer. And in this game, again, there's honestly really not a lot of shame in not hanging with Ohio State. That's a freaking very good team that, again, coming into the year, everyone's like, this team could win the national championship. I think people honestly probably weren't giving them the due that they deserve because of that early season loss. But since then, they've been nothing short of completely and totally dominant. And I would anticipate they're going to keep that going. And it will not surprise me at all if that team, I mean, I think CJ Stroud's going to win the Heisman now. Will not surprise me if they win the national championship. It's just a very, very, very good team.
Okay. Austin, last year, MSU had 28 guys that were no longer with the team after the year. Five of them don't play football.
That's at least comical.
Three of them are in the FCS. One, two, three. 15 play G5. Six went on to play Power 5 football.
Yeah.
And don't play. This year, it won't be similar to that, but the number will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to... I'm not trying to, like, knock people down, like, because I'm not trying. What I don't want you to take away from this is me saying, like, these guys gotta go. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's what's probably going to happen if last year is an indication of how Mel is going to be treating the roster, turning it over again. And I'm not saying that there are guys in the portal like Kenneth Walker or like Jarrett Horst. But I can tell you, I am going to tell you there are, and I can tell you that he got those guys with selling nothing but playing.
Yeah, right.
But playing time. And now he's selling playing time and taking another step forward.
Well, with actual success. I mean, at the end of the day, and I think as we get into talking about Penn State, like, the reason why these games coming up are still, Michigan State still has a lot to play for, is because if they're able to finish this regular season 10-2, you can then tell every single recruit, every single transfer, every single everything that the only team we are looking up to is that Ohio State potentially national championship team. Like, that's it. That's the goal. That's where we want to get to. Come here and help us get there. Like, that's the pitch now. And that's so much different than everybody on this roster sucks. We need people to come in and just play, which is what his pitch was last year.
Yeah. And trust me, bro, it'll work.
Like, it worked once. Just trust me. I'm willing to trust him that it works again.
Well, now you kind of have to, right? So to your point, you beat Penn State. You can hand on heart say, we are number two in this conference. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sorry, Ohio State's going to do the same thing to Wisconsin.
I think they're going to do something bad to Michigan, too.
Well, you already heard me say that if they're playing Wisconsin, we already know.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So, but I think the other thing to look at, if you like numbers, Bill Connolly's SP Plus, the gap between 1 through 3 is so little, but from 3 to 4, and 4 is Michigan, by the way, is the same as I believe 4 to 15.
Wow.
So that's the gap. And keep in mind, your Michigan State Spartans beat number 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But the teams that are good, 3 good teams, and we say it every year, they're the same 3 teams: Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia. Mm-hmm. And Georgia hasn't figured out how to win. So that could change this year, but they're only 3. So your team beat the number 4 team. If you beat Penn State, even with a banged up roster, imagine what Mel Tucker can sell.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We are right. We're first in line behind the elite. And I know we lost by 50, but we're first in line. Look at it. It's the truth.
Yeah. And I think that's why, and you know, they haven't announced anything yet, but we didn't even last week get to talk about the extension that's rumored to be out there. But this might actually be a good time, because I think first and foremost, I do not expect him to sign anything before the Penn State game. I think that would be, I think optics matter when you're going to hand out a check like this. For those who've been living under a rock, it's rumored to be 10 years, $95 million, which is a massive, massive deal. Would make Mel Tucker the highest paid African-American coach in sports, which is honestly something that makes me very proud to be a Michigan State fan, being able to say that among many other things. But that, like, optics matter when you're handing this out. And they didn't want to do it before the Ohio State game, because they didn't want to probably take away from everything that, you know, was going into that game. Now it would look just kind of ridiculous to roll it out after you go and get absolutely clowned like that. However, you kind of give yourself, I mean, it's going to get announced one way or the other. So I think they're just taking the bet that they'll be able to have a decent, you know, game against Penn State, hopefully, and sign it then.
Do you want to hot take?
I do.
I think everything you said about the contract is 100%. I also think that the contract is not done until you see there was potential for more based on the final 2 games of the year. Didn't happen against Ohio State. I just think that there are numbers involved, you know, signing bonus numbers involved.
Sure.
If depending on the final 2 games of the year, and this one didn't go well, to your point, optics wouldn't make sense to do that again, to do it this week.
No.
You beat Penn State, you lose to Penn State, you know, that signing bonus number could change, right? Like, I don't know. That's my take. I don't know anything.
It's certainly interesting. I mean, but the greater point is that this will get done one way or the other. And I think that being able to sell that to recruits as well, saying, you know, not only are we right here, but I'm here for an extended period of time during which, you know, we are going to keep growing and getting better and yada, yada, yada. So it's not only, hey, look, I've already done it, but I'm also going to be around to keep doing it.
Right.
And we're going to be the team that gives them the rivalry that they haven't had. I think there's a lot to be said for that. But I also think, and just to dive into this a little bit before we move ahead, a lot of people are saying that that's a lot of money for, like, assuming it ends up where we've heard it's going to end up, for a guy who has only done X, Y, and Z. My points back are, one, there's no salary cap.
Calm down.
Yeah, it's not your money. So who, like, truly, who cares? It doesn't matter. It does not matter. It's not your money. Stop complaining. And guess what? If he had gone to LSU, LSU would have paid him a similar amount. Just like they're going to end up paying probably Billy Napier or one of these other guys. And people would have said, well, I can't believe Michigan State let him get away. Which one is it going to be? The other part is that this is where, and you and I have talked about it so many times, this is where having two billionaires as major donors sets you apart. Actually, multiple billionaires. I'm not sure, but I think DeAndre or St. Andre, Steve St. Andre, I believe he is also a billionaire. We just had another one laying around that I didn't know about.
Was he kind of a broke boy compared to the other two billionaires?
Yeah, I mean, he's a little B. They're big B. But this is where that these guys making this actual commitment to giving you the program makes a huge difference. Otherwise, like, you can only spend this money if you've got people that are willing to do it. And MSU does. And I think it says a lot about the commitment to making the program truly elite.
Dude, you know what sucks? And it doesn't matter, because honestly, the people that do matter are unfazed by this information. But it's just, like, so obnoxious to everyone gatekeeps, like, Michigan State fandom. I feel like they people love to tell you how you're supposed to feel with that aren't Michigan State fans.
Like, yep.
You know, and it's so obnoxious. Like, thank you for telling me how to handle my program. Now I know how to do it. And when I'm saying that, I mean, there are people who are like, LSU's, hey, oh, you overpaid for this guy. He sucks. Okay. Again, not my money, but okay.
Yeah, right.
Number two, then they're like, then the narrative changes. He wins a little bit. Yeah, someone's going to come and take him.
You're right.
Okay. What if we just paid that amount so that no one did? Oh my God, you paid that much for him?
Exactly.
So wait a minute. It was okay if LSU did it or USC did it or Texas did it, but it's not okay if we do it. Because why? And the other incredible thing I see people saying is like, well, if you overpay for him, like, you know, who knows? Who knows what would happen if the next guy you get? Are you nuts? What do you mean, who knows what happens? I'll tell you what happens. The next guy you get sucks. Your program's screwed for a decade.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And again, it's nobody's money. So why does anyone care if he's being paid?
Why are we thinking about the next guy? Who like cares? The fact of the matter is they just locked up this guy for 10 years.
Well, I just mean argument. No. I meant the argument is like,
I get it.
If LSU got him, then like, who's to say the next guy, you know, doesn't do just as well. Wait, why? Why would that just happen? Like, what program in the world does that happen at? And I saw
nailing a guy. I think the thing that people miss, and people seem to think that hiring a good coach is really easy to do. Mm-hmm. And it is, look at the programs that are replacing their head coach this offseason. Florida just fired Dan Mullen. LSU just fired a coach that won a national championship 2 years ago. USC has an open job. Washington, for maybe different reasons, but Washington has an open job. I mean, these are not inconsequential programs in the landscape.
Bro, Chris Peterson?
Miami, Florida is going to be open.
No, I think Manny Sanders.
Virginia Tech. I mean, like, these are jobs that coaches get and stay at.
Chris Peterson handpicked his next head coach.
Yep.
Jimmy Lake. It took them 10 games for them to realize that was messed up. So, like, you know, for the other folks who are like, hey, D'Antonio should have been able to pick. Maybe it works out. But I'm saying Chris Peterson, it didn't. There is so much
luck. Well, there's just no guarantee.
There's no guarantee. So what difference is it to anyone if, you know, if we pay Mel Tucker $1 trillion, you know, Dogecoin? Who cares? Like, what does it matter to
anybody? Well, the point of the matter is, if you have a good coach, you need to pay to keep him. And you know,
college football fans, it's like a caste society. Like, it is a elitist, classist thing.
Yep. Where absolutely.
If you just nibble a little too high, it's fun until you're too perky. And then they want to kick you back down. You know, that's why this blue blood thing exists. It's because people just like the idea of, like, this class. And it's broken. And I'm sorry that our program is the one that's going to bully their way to the top. It is.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to give it everything that they've got, and it's really.
It happened to Clemson.
I was just going to say. We've seen it before. It happens every few years where someone is just makes the right hire and is willing to put the resources against it to make it work. And you know, listen, whether it ultimately gets Michigan State to this next tier of football. Who knows? I mean, who knows? There's just so far to go until that point. But at the end of the day, they're gonna try to get there. And that's what this hire signals. If it doesn't work, you could never say, like, as a Michigan State fan, you can't be mad. Like, they got a great head coach. They're paying to keep him around. If it doesn't pan out, it won't be because they didn't do everything they could and give him every single resource he could ever possibly ask for to make it work.
I'm working.
And you got to feel pretty good about that.
I clearly got worked up. Look at me. Look at us.
Look at us. Here we are talking about paying coaches $9.5 million a year. Pretty cool.
Wait, Austin, I have one hypothetical for you. Because money isn't real and it's not our money. Right. Are you ready for this hypothetical?
I'm very ready.
Here is the most boss move I can think of. It from our billionaire triumvirate. Who are taking us to the elitist class of college football. publicly stating, we will pay Harbaugh his full salary to stay at Michigan. And number two, because we don't want him to leave. And number two, we will pay Ryan Day a blank check amount of money to leave Ohio State.
Yeah, I would sign up for number two.
How about
before I'd signed up for another one? Well, yeah. I mean, listen.
Because money's not real.
It's true. It really isn't. I think we're finding that out.
We all agreed as a society that it was a thing we all just, like, assumed mattered. I'm saying our three billionaires literally say to Ryan Day, and everyone has a number, Austin. Everyone.
It's true.
Ryan Day, what number to walk away today? What do you think it is, Austin? What do you think his number is?
Oh, God, dude. What does he make a year?
I don't care.
No, I do.
Like 9 million. 8.5. I think he makes 8.5.
That's a shit ton of money. No, it makes 6.6. Okay.
Sure. With bonuses.
So he's going to make a lot more than that next year. He makes 9 million a year.
Yeah.
About 100 million.
$100 million.
I think if you offered him $100 million today, that's more than 10 years worth of money. I think he would have to consider it. I think I would allow him to get another job outside of the Big Ten.
No.
Away
from college football. You have to go coach in the NFL. Okay. I'm getting rid of him as a problem.
Okay.
Much in the way Dan Gilbert did that with John Beilein. You took him out.
Get out. Leave.
I will get you out of here.
I do not want you here.
Okay. Enough of that.
All right.
These highlights are getting to me.
It's okay.
Okay. So the Penn State games matters. I think we.
Yes, it does.
We can agree. But we'll get to that in a second. Do you want to go around the country real quick?
Yeah. Let's do some reviews and then we'll talk Penn State.
Okay, so you already described your situation where, you know, maybe these games happen, you just weren't aware of them. So,
correct.
Not your fault. I totally get it. I would have been in the same state. I'm just going to go quickly through Arkansas, who I feel like is kind of like sharing a moment with us this season on our come up together.
I love it.
They went to Tuscaloosa and lost very respectable 42-35. My other takeaway is that, like, can we be very done with the committee's comment of Alabama is in the second tier by themselves?
Yeah.
I don't feel like you can hand on heart say that after seeing Ohio State, not just against us. I mean, the past like 2 months.
Yeah. It's got to be Ohio State number two. I think they have to be two. I think they have to jump Bama after this past week. And Bama will slip down to number three because.
Look at you doing transitions. That was great.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Utah, my Utes, 38-7. That's not a win, dude.
That's an ass kicking.
That is an embarrassment. I mean, you have a hard time justifying. Let's say Oregon was undefeated. You'd have a hard time looking at that and being like, does Oregon get in the playoff?
Yeah, no, it for sure.
It doesn't matter, but that was bad.
Yeah, man, that's because that's an ass kicking. I mean, that knocks them out, right? Like, they're definitely out of the picture now.
You know the other thing, Austin? We all just like pretended it was cool that they lost to a 3-8 Stanford team.
Yeah, right.
Like, we were just like, oh,
we
yeah.
We did kind of gloss over that. Well, that's how impressive the win was over Ohio State. I think that's the only thing I'll be very interested to see how much if the committee tries to keep Bama there by justifying that Oregon win isn't as good now.
Well, I think we all – I would be shocked.
I think we all know. Ohio State should be number two. Ohio State, Bama 2-3. I would have a lot of fun with that. But I don't know. We'll talk about that later. I don't know if Bama can beat Georgia.
Well, we'll get to that exactly. Cincinnati, for the first time in a long time, took care of some serious business. SMU, while not ranked, was an 8-2 team. And, Cincinnati beat them 48-14 in a way that you would have expected them to beat South Florida or something. Cincinnati really making a case to be a legitimate playoff team, not a team that, you know, gets in because other teams lost. Like, they might deserve it. And, they have a couple more games to make that case, but this certainly was a strong.
They need Bama to lose. They need Bama to, to be a two-loss team, and then I think they've got a chance.
I think they always did, but kind of my point was maybe, you know, they'll never get in over a one-loss Power 5 team, but I would just argue that they're hitting their stride, it would appear.
Yeah, they needed to win this game with style points, and they did for sure. Yeah,
and they did. Our Wake Forest Demon Deacons went into Clemson and lost 48-27. That was kind of sad. It was Wake Forest has been a fun story all year. My question for you is, does Dave, you said it last week, I think you're like, where does Dave Clawson get a job?
And yeah.
Does Florida make sense?
I think that any of these big openings would be smart to take a look at. If Florida might make sense. I don't really know where his like connections are necessarily. But I feel like with Florida, what everybody says about Florida is that they need, like, apparently Dan Mullen didn't like recruiting, and that typically won't go over well in the SEC. Uh-oh. So if Dave Clawson loves recruiting, then he might be able to make that work. I'll say this. I was hoping that this is what Michigan State's game would ultimately end up being like, 48-27, where you could go in and be like, you know what, we scored some points, but ultimately didn't have it. I don't know where he'll end up, but I feel like someone's really missing out. I don't know what Florida's going to do. I feel like between him, I think, to be honest with you, if I'm Florida, I'd probably call Mark Stoops. And if I get Mark Stoops and I'm Kentucky, I turn around and I call Dave Clawson in a second. If you are a second tier teamish that can get him right now, that can say, listen, we know you're Wake Forest, like, you're doing a great job, but like, let me give you some resources. You'd be crazy not to call him.
Okay. You heard it here first, folks, because Florida would be maybe a bridge too far for Dave Clawson, who frankly can't recruit at the level that, as you mentioned, Florida specs. He's never gotten or ever gone after that type of kid.
Right.
And Kenneth Walker is a great example. he's Wake's the only one that offered him as a Power Five. So shout out to Dave for that. But to your point, Kentucky does have the war chest, but is never going to get the bigger name. This is the perfect name. If Mark, they already have the perfect name. Stoops is doing great.
Right. I think he can take on more, though. I think he's proven that he could handle a Florida or a
Wow.
Yeah, I think he could handle Florida. I think that would be the first person I would call if I was Florida. I think Billy Napier is going to end up with one of these jobs from Louisiana, too. I don't know which one, but one of them. See, it seems like, I mean, I've read his name and its connection with Florida and LSU at this point. So
both SEC jobs, he's parlaying them against each other, you would appear. So, yeah, we love the coaching search, if you can't tell, more than basic.
Love it.
So some Big Ten results, Austin, we're going to fly through them. The first one, Penn State beat Rutgers 28-0. And irrelevant to us because Sean Clifford, he started this game. And potentially a surprise to some, but he clearly was not himself. And I believe the first 12 possessions of this game were a punt, which
– perfect.
I hope you weren't driving when you heard that, because that would have put me into the median. Too much for me.
My heart skipped a beat when I looked at the box score. That's for sure. That's big. I mean, like, we'll talk about it in a second, but yeah, he makes that thing go, man. Like, I know they went and they beat Rutgers 28-0. It is what it is. Rutgers is probably a bowl team, but like,
no.
Yeah.
Talk about that in a second. You might be right, but you got me excited about another thing.
Okay.
Next week. Yeah, the backup came in. It was not the backup kid. That was Jahan Dotson's teammate and the one that came in against Iowa, because that was a train wreck. This backup came in and threw for four touchdowns, I believe, or at least was part of four touchdown drives, and put together a competent Penn State-like offense versus Rutgers. But to your point, you know, I don't think Michigan State's going to know who's going to be coming in at quarterback next week. The other thing that, of note, Rutgers had 160 yards. And it's Rutger, but Penn State's defense is the real deal, the bigger takeaway.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with that. It's a very good – I've said that a long time ago. That's why some of these games they've had have blown my mind, is because they're super, super talented defense.
It's true. There was a game at Wrigley Field, Austin. Purdue beat Northwestern 32-14, and my takeaway from this one is Northwestern's 3-8.
Yep.
They've been to the Big Ten championship game twice. And It's upsetting.
You can say it.
It rubs me the wrong way. And I don't even want to change divisions. Like, I'm not even going to do that right now. It's got to eat up, you know, the Big Ten win that, right?
It's got to piss off every other team in the West. Like, I just imagine being Nebraska, where you think you're good and then you're just not. I honestly, if I'm Wisconsin, every year I don't make it, it's a failure. It'd
kill me if I was Iowa. They've been
yeah.
I mean, Iowa is legitimately a much better program. But they have done nothing with it. Michigan
made it one time and lost in heartbreaking fashion. Yeah, and then Northwestern's gone and gotten smoked twice.
So what? You know, it's like you lose. Loss is a loss. But
I wish MSU was in that division.
We're not doing this. Iowa beat Illinois 33-23. I was kind of shocked by this score. I knew Illinois is maybe better than their record. And by the way, hate to do it, but shout out to Burt.
Hell yeah. He's
together a nice – for Illinois, a nice season, considering what he took in. You know, they beat
an extremely weird season. One of the weirder you'll see.
Yeah, they're going to finish maybe 5-7. They're going to play Northwestern to finish the year. That's pretty damn good for Illinois.
I would totally agree, especially considering how they started this season and some of the games they've dropped. I mean, 5-7 with wins over what, Wisconsin and Penn State? I think, Wisconsin and Penn State. You got to feel pretty good.
I don't know why I said Iowa. They beat Nebraska. Nebraska, Penn State in the 9 overtime game. at Minnesota.
Yeah. Which
is, yeah. I mean, like, that's not bad. And then they just lost, as we mentioned, to Iowa by 10. He's not maybe as far away. And Illinois might be I've always thought from a football standpoint, they were a sleeping giant. They are the only thing in the state. Northwestern has a different type of kid that they recruit. The biggest problem is they can't get kids from Chicagoland down to Champaign. And I really think that Illinois is a sleeping giant. If they just find the right formula, I have no reason to believe they can't beat the next Wisconsin.
They've just got to pick. They've got to pick the recruiting grounds that they want to go dominate and go dominate them. That's it. That's the end of story. But it's the same thing they got to do with basketball. Basketball's got to lock up Chicagoland. And when they do great. And when they don't, they don't. I mean, you're never going to get kids from Indiana because they're going to go to Notre Dame. Or at this point, IU and Purdue are recruiting well enough, same on the same caliber or above. I don't know if there's enough room in Ohio, to be honest with you. I don't know if there's like enough to go around.
It has enough. I think the state of Illinois has enough.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But listen, at 5-7, Bert, you can feel okay about that this year. Yeah. For sure.
Hell yeah. Moving on, Minnesota went to Indiana, wins 35-14. Minnesota is the most 7-5 team that's ever 7-5. And
it's just a 7-5 program.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think they're okay with that. Like, we would say that as a slight. And they would smile and nod and be like, thank you. That is,
if you're 7-5 every year with a couple of 9-3s mixed in, you're pretty happy.
Yeah, man, for sure. They're more focused on like the Vikings and
they've got other stuff going on. It's fine.
Indiana, I'm going to save this for next week after they get housed by Purdue. I'm going to have a long dialogue about going 2-10 after being.
Mm-hmm.
You are not that easy. I am sorry. Hold that.
Just entirely too much dip on this Indiana chip.
That was a communion wafer trying to pick up rocks.
Yeah. Rocks. Yeah. It's one of the bigger letdown seasons. I mean, and Penix getting hurt obviously changes everything for them, but like still 2-10. Woof.
Don't care.
That'll set your program back. That might set your program back to the point that I'm not sure when you're going to get back to where you were last year.
Well, Tom Allen ain't going anywhere. His buyout's like 20.
That is for sure.
Michigan.
Tom Ference, they call him. Go ahead.
Michigan went to Maryland, beat the brakes off the Terps 59-18. I've seen this movie before, Austin.
Yes.
For both.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll say about this game, because it's not really worth discussing, is give them credit for not falling into a trap.
And give Maryland credit for staying true to themselves and not winning the number.
Yep, absolutely.
And then the final game, Nebraska hung. They did Nebraska things, went to Madison and lost 35-28. The Wisconsin defense that was, you rightfully called out as maybe I said crazy things like as elite as the Georgia defense, you rightfully corrected me and gave up 450 yards to Nebraska. And yeah. Have fun against CJ and friends in Indianapolis.
I think I read a stat that they could go 1-8 in the Big Ten, but outscore their opponents.
Yep.
Like it's like an impossible.
It's awesome.
Season that they're pulling off. I mean, they haven't lost a game by more than 9 points. And that was against Ohio State. Like every other game they've made it. They lost by 8 to Illinois, 7 to Oklahoma, 3 to Michigan State, 3 to Michigan, 7 to Minnesota, 5 to Purdue, and now 7 to Wisconsin. I can't think of a season I would hate going through more than this one, because I would be watching this team thinking this team is not this bad. And then I would look up and see that they're 3-8. And I would just,
we did it. That happened. It was 2016. We did.
Were all the games that close?
We were not. I don't know if they were that close, but we were. Michigan State was not a 3-9
team. But imagine going 3-9 and outscoring your opponents. Like, I can't think of something more frustrating. Well, like, because at least in those teams where we were so spectacularly bad, I feel like the offense, like we were just. I remember watching that team thinking, like, this team is bad. I can't imagine that Nebraska fans have watched 12 competitive games. The only games that haven't been competitive are when they've beaten the shit out of three teams. You know, every other game's been a barn burner, and I just can't imagine. My heart would explode. I don't think I could handle it.
But they already know what's going to happen. They're going to lose. So it's like watching the Lions. I hope they just like kind of know it's coming. The other thing, though.
What an awful parallel.
It's true, though. The other thing that is really hard for them is, as you mentioned, like, when you're in every game, like, you didn't even have the benefit. The worst part is they're going to look at the Scott Frost experiment. And maybe he should get another year if you're in every game. I don't know. But
I mean, they're already going to give it to him, aren't they?
Well, I know. But like, my thing is, it's like, what world do I think that this even matters?
It doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Good point. Let's move on. So upcoming national games, we got the Egg Bowl Thursday night. So save some room after the Battle for Atlantis basketball game. It should be fun.
Matt Corral already going pro. Gotta love that.
Love it. And by the way, if you can get Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach in the same room, you got it.
Oh, I can't wait to see them shake each other's hands.
Alabama at Auburn. Your boy Bo Nix is hurt, so this could get
even. Oh, so Auburn's gonna win.
Maybe.
All right. I mean, I can't imagine a team can get worse with Bo Nix not playing.
Well, we'll see. I don't even know. Oregon at Oregon State. I don't know. I put this down before Oregon lost, so sorry.
Well, this is also I just hope I can see the field during this game this year, because this was the one last year where it was so foggy that you couldn't actually see the game. I think that happened again this past weekend.
It did in Washington State, but also, what do you think Oregon State's record is?
I have no idea. 1-10?
7-4.
Really?
Really. 7-4. Really big turnaround. And then the final one, Oklahoma at Oklahoma State. We all know this one's kind of a sad rivalry, is the wrong word. Have you ever been? Do you remember the last time Oklahoma State ever won this thing? I don't. Do they win?
Bedlam?
Yeah.
No. This is the one every year where they think this might be the chance, and then it never happens.
Does that sound familiar to you at all?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay. We'll quickly go through the Big Ten schedule. Iowa, Nebraska is a Friday game, which is right. It should be a Friday.
It's better. It's better for everybody that way. Friday, middle of the day. I mean, nobody. I predict Nebraska will lose this game by 4 in just the dumbest way possible.
Adrian Martinez not playing this game. And the only thing I'm going to read to you, because I think you'd appreciate it, is this guy, I'm going to read you this obituary. Resident Milton Andrew Munson passed away at 73. In lieu of flowers, please place an irresponsibly large wager on Nebraska beating Iowa. That's a real obituary.
What a king. What an absolute king. I have to say, I think an irresponsibly large bet on Nebraska, and this one might be any bet on Nebraska in this one.
Your choice. Let's see. Indiana at Purdue. Sure. Indiana. I'm just
waiting. Sure. Yeah, I think keep it in the chamber for next week, because I can't wait to hear it.
Maryland at Rutgers. I guffawed at this earlier because both are 5-6 and playing for a bowl game.
I think this is all we could have ever hoped for out of these two teams coming into the conference, is this exact Armageddon situation.
Northwestern at Illinois. Sure.
The battle for Chicago. Nobody cares.
Wisconsin at Minnesota. This is my OAP game. I think Wisconsin's looking ahead to the championship.
It's certainly possible. This is also just like, this is the hopefully we see a Dilly Bar in the snowstorm game.
Yeah,
the guy eating ice cream on the sidelines. Yeah, this could, I can see that. I mean, Minnesota has been frisky enough. I could see them. This would really be the one that changes, like that 7-5 to 8-4. Oh man, PJ Flex kind of doing it game.
Exactly. And then finally, Ohio State at Michigan. Line is 8.5 for the Buckeyes. What do you feel like?
I would take the Buckeyes with a -8.5 all day. And again, this isn't necessarily a slight on Michigan. I kind of think this will be like a 62-35 type of game, which I feel like was the end score of one of their games a few years ago. I just don't know how Michigan slows down that offense. I don't know how anybody does it. It's not even necessarily a Michigan thing. And then I just don't think Michigan has, like, again, this is the same shit every single year where it's like they play this same style of football. When they play elite teams, it doesn't work. We've seen it the one time they've played what you would call, I wouldn't even say an elite team, obviously, in Michigan State. It didn't really work. I don't know that it's going to change against Ohio State. I think Ohio State is also just such a buzzsaw that Michigan might be a really good team. They're probably a deserving New Year's Six team, but like this, you know, if Ohio State just beat the brakes off MSU that bad, they clearly weren't looking ahead. Now imagine if you have their full attention.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just going to get ugly quick.
Yeah.
I hope. I pray.
Yeah, you don't have, I mean, tell them what you told me about when you're leaving the horseshoe and you were talking to Buckeye fans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my common ground with everybody this past weekend was just win next, was just beat Michigan. Like, I'm just moving on already. Just beat Michigan. And they all said, oh, yeah, we will. Like, it was like such a taken for granted. And to be honest with you, after the last 20 years, I can't really blame them for feeling that way. And I you know, every year is supposed to be the one where Michigan breaks through. But I haven't heard people say that this year. Because Ohio State's so good. So I just kind of think they're just a little too much. But I think with a less explosive offense, I may feel a little bit differently about this one. If it was a JT Barrett offense, right, you know, I might really give Michigan a legitimate shot, but I'm not sure how they keep up. And I just don't know how they keep up.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are saying that.
Yeah.
About Ohio State. All right. So fast forward, Michigan State playing Penn State for the Land Grant Trophy, 2:30 on ABC. Pick 'em at a lot of places, Austin.
Yeah.
I think, you know, part of it is people know if Sean Clifford's healthy playing. People saw what Michigan State did last week. Computers are saying about a 45% chance Michigan State wins. So near a pick 'em as well. You know, the overall, I just wonder, we know that Michigan State's rushing offense is fantastic when Kenneth Walker is playing. When he's not, it becomes very average very quickly. Although Eli Collins had some nice runs. Let's throw that out there. I wonder, because Penn State has a fairly stout rushing defense, if Kenneth Walker's at 100%, you're kind of relying on Peyton Thorne. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Penn State has a pretty stout pass defense as well. So this could be an old-fashioned D'Antonio grinder.
Yeah.
if you're lucky, because our passing defense, as everyone knows, is leaves a little bit to be desired. So
yeah, I think this is I think this just has ugly game written all over it. I mean, because even if Sean Clifford plays, he's clearly not going to be 100%. Christian Bellew, their backup, is obviously very untested. The only thing that could keep it from that, in my opinion, is they do not run the ball very well at all. They have barely over 1,000 yards, a little over 1,200 yards rushing as a team this entire year. And their fourth leading rusher is Sean Clifford, who obviously won't be running that same amount moving forward. What scares me a little bit is that, and in this, I think, is why it's so important Clifford is if he's healthy or not, is that their passing is how they score. I mean, Jahan Dotson is a legitimate first round talent, 83 catches, about 1,045 yards receiving and 10 touchdowns. Parker Washington and Keandre Lambert Smith have both turned in pretty respectable seasons. They have two tight ends that have double digit catches. So offensively, they are definitely more of a passing offense than a rushing offense. I don't think they have necessarily the downfield explosion that Ohio State does. So, you know, some of the things that, although they do have several very long touchdowns this year, so maybe I'm completely wrong about that. But hopefully it won't be that.
Jahan Dotson is a long man, right?
Yeah, he's a superstar. He's a superstar. So that's the name to watch. I think what scares me more, I think Michigan State can keep them in the 20s, probably, especially if Clifford's not playing. The thing that scares me is how's MSU going to score? Because to your point, I think this Penn State defense is extremely talented. It is legit, especially up front. Arnold Ebitekite, I had no idea if I got that right. Should have let you do that one too. He has 9.5 sacks this year. I believe he's a Temple transfer. He's a machine. Their linebacker Ellis Brooks has almost 100 tackles. They've got Jair Brown, their safety, has 4 picks this year. It's just that I think that this is a legitimately very, very talented defense. And if Kenneth Walker's not going, you know, you got fresh legs behind them, that's for sure. But you're going to need one of Peyton Thorne's better days. And you know, kind of as we wrap up here, this is an important game.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between going 9-3, which would mean 1-3 in your last 4, and going 10-2, and again, being able to sell that story of we are only behind one of the elite programs in the world, I think there's a very tangible difference there. And so winning this game, you know, it says a lot about where you are as a program. And again, to be able to, you know, when we go into any season, Michigan State has 3 games circled on their schedule, and that's Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. If in your first year playing all 3 of them in the same season, you can come out and, right? Or maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't think that's true. Whatever. In your first like full actual year as head coach, Mel Tucker can come out and say, I beat 2 of the 3 of them. That you got to feel pretty good about that. Double digit wins. You probably lock up a New Year's 6 bowl. There is, despite last week's result, quite a bit on the line.
Lots to play for. Obviously, the Land Grant Trophy being the most important thing to play for.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that it is. You hope that the home field advantage can help, and, yep. And that's what I'd like to see is, you know, does the stadium sell out? I would hope so. This team is, you know, 9-2. Like, I would hope that we would have a full stadium at the end of November, even though we're not playing for a division, considering expectations going in. I would hope this home field advantage is able to push them over the top. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Go to the game. If you have tickets, go, please.
Or give them to someone who would.
Or give them to somebody who would, yes.
Who have never been. So
I agree.
All right.
All right, guys.
Feast week.
Eat up. I'm going to certainly be doing my fair share of eating. So I think that's it, John.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. As always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this has been awesome, and we will catch you next week.
Yep.